hours, but it is 1:30, so I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. Good afternoon, everyone. Please bear with me as I read our COVID preamble. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. I need to begin by doing a roll call of committee, board and committee members, staff and consultants and vendors. I will start with board members. My name is Peter Lisi, chair of the board, and I'm present. Michael Angelini?
Present.
Thank you. Lawrence Davis? Lawrence Davis? Not yet. Steve Elbaum?
Present.
Thank you. Daryl Hill? Daryl? Not yet. Kimberly Kennison. Kimberly. No. Susan Martin. Thank you, Susan. Alan Matamana.
Present.
Thank you, Alan. Mark Vahalek. All right, one more call for Daryl Hill. Lawrence Davis. Okay. Chief of Staff, Jeanette Weldon. I see her.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Denise Aguilera?
Here.
Thank you. Jessica Bishop?
Present.
Thank you. Dan Junji?
Present.
Thank you. Bob Jandro?
Present.
Thank you. Krista Johnson?
Present.
Thank you. Dan Kurowski?
Present.
Thank you. Carly Levin?
Present.
Thank you. Joanne Mekowitz?
Present.
Thank you. Michael Morris?
Present.
Marlene Pagan?
Present.
Thank you. Cynthia Peoples? Cynthia? No Cynthia yet.
She's waving.
Cynthia is present. Her audio is not working.
Oh, okay. Cynthia is present. Julia Polano.
Present.
Thank you. Kara Stewart.
Present.
And Betty Sugarman-Weintraub.
Present.
Thank you all. Anyone from Chief of Staff that I missed?
All right. Peter.
Daryl, you're here. Thank you.
Hi, Peter. It's Lawrence. I'm here.
All right. We've got a full... Thank you both. Still no Kimberly Kennison, correct? All right. So, list of consultants and advisors. When I call your company's name, if you could please identify yourself. Acacia Financial?
Josh Nikita.
Anyone else from Acacia? No. Carmody Torrance?
Ann Zucker's here.
All right, just you, Ann. Sounds like it. Dave Pitney.
Hi, Namita Shah is here.
Okay, thank you, Namita. Hardwick Law Firm.
Debbie Henry's here.
Thank you. Hawkins, Delafield and Wood.
Lori Hall's here.
Thank you. Hinckley Allen.
Tom Marion here.
Thank you, Tom. McCarter and English. Anyone, McCarter and English? Okay. Public Financial Management.
Jeremy Bass is on.
Thank you. Pullman and Comley.
Eric Russell is on.
Thank you. Robinson Cole.
Hi, Ed. Tim Reichick is on.
Thank you. And Shipman and Goodwin.
Yes, Bruce Chadwick is on.
Thank you all. Did I, is any additional consultants, advisors on the call whose name I didn't call? Anyone? All right, thank you very much. As we proceed into discussions, I ask that individuals state their name and title, if applicable, before speaking during the meeting. Votes will be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. And in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or email advising whether, number one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or number two, the time that the meeting will resume. With our preamble complete, we can move into our agenda. First item of business is minutes from our prior meeting, and I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes. Is there a motion? I've got a motion from Lawrence, and I think Susan seconded it.
Yes.
So we've got a motion and a second. Are there any corrections or edits to the minutes? Corrections or edits to January minutes? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor accepting the minutes as presented, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. Minutes are approved with a unanimous vote. Thank you. Next item is the independent school report. I'm going to turn it over to Michael Morris.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Just waiting for Kara to put it up there. Perfect. All right, for the independent school sector for the fiscal year ending 2021, I would characterize it as a solid year for the sector. If you go to the next slide, please, Kara. The pandemic hasn't had a real major effect on the sector. Student demand remains strong. Total applications over the past 5 years increased almost 17% for the boarding schools and over 19% for the day schools. Total enrollment has been steadily increasing over the past 5 years. Due to favorable investment performance, the balance sheets have gotten stronger, with endowment medium increasing almost 60% over the past 5 years. When you look at total spendable cash and investments, they've increased 39% from the prior year and it's at its highest level in the past 5 years. And when you look at the spendable cash and investments to debt ratio at 2.8 times, it's favorable, but it's still considered somewhat leveraged when you compare it against Moody's median. And when you look at cash and investments to operations, total median 1.6 times, that is also lower than Moody's median. Overall, financial performance has been favorable. This is due in part to all the PPP loans that were forgiven in 2021, and the schools were able to recognize these as additional revenue. For net tuition revenue, the rate has increased, but at a decreasing rate for the past 3 years. However, there's been favorable operating cash flows, medium at 19%. Debt service is manageable with the low annual debt service burden of 4.5%, and which has resulted in favorable debt service coverage increasing from 3.14 times in fiscal year 17 to 3.79 in 2021. As far as debt issuance, bank direct purchases still seems to be the choice for offerings for the sector, with 83% of the offerings over the past 5 years were bank direct purchases. And the refundings to new money was just about 50% each. Go to the next slide, Kara. All right, for the total portfolio, it's just under $710 million, which represents about 8.4% of CHIFA's total portfolio. You look at the distribution among the financings, private placements account for about 3/4, and public unenhanced offerings about 1/4. And then you see we have one bond issue that's still outstanding, representing about 2.7%. And also there are no more letter of credit transactions in the portfolio. A couple of institutions did pay off their loans in 2021, Kingswood Oxford and Norwich Free Academy paid off their bonds. Next slide. For looking at the portfolio for the boarding schools, 6 of the 20 schools have their own rating, all A or higher. Hotchkiss, you see there in the light blue, is the only school that has not issued a direct bank purchase offering. Next slide. For the day schools, we have only three with their own rating, all A or higher. And for the all the day schools, all have issued bank direct purchase offerings. All right, next slide, please.
Michael, can I interrupt? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
This is Peter. Where is Winston Prep? I've never even heard of that one.
They're in Norwalk. Actually, they have schools in New York City and New Jersey. They issued about 8 years ago, I think.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
All right. For the issuance over the past 5 years, just under $500 million, we have 29 bond series for 15 schools. Like I said, 52% were for refundings and the 83% were bank purchases. This year, we're gonna have probably three more issuances. So it's gonna be a pretty good year as far as the independent schools were issuing to us. All right, the next one, please. All right, applications. For the boarding schools, they increased 4.4% from the prior year. That's at its highest level in the past 5 years. Although the medium decreased from the prior year and it's about 10.3% lower than it was 5 years ago. You had a range of applications from Chota at over 3,100 to only 119 for the Marblewood School. Some notable increases over the years, past 5 years include Chote, Hotchkiss, and Ethel Walker. For the day schools, I mentioned they declined almost 8% from the prior year, but they're still about over 19% higher than they were 5 years ago. And see the median application of 440. That's increased over 11% for the past 5 years. And the range for the applications for the day schools from 778 for the Greenwich Country Day School to 125 for Washington Montessori. And here's some notable improvements include Washington Montessori, Greenwich Country Day School, and Richfield Academy. All right, next slide, police selectivity, yes. For the boarding schools, despite the increase in applications, the boarding school median increased from 43% to 47% this year. That's slightly higher than it was 5 years ago. Here, the range from a low of 16.2% to 80%. For the day schools, the decline in applications contributed to the increase in the selectivity from over 46% to over 52%. That is also its highest level in the past 5 years, but not significantly higher, as you can see from their four-year prior average. And the range here for the day schools ranged from 33% to almost 100% for Xavier High School. Next slide on matriculation. For the boarding school, it's been relatively stable over the past 5 years, just averaging under 50%. Here, the range was 24% for Marblewood School to a high of 69%, very favorable for Taft. For the day schools, the medium decreased slightly from the prior year, but at 73.7%, it's still very favorable. And it's at the second highest level in the past 5 years. Xavier High School reported the highest yield in the portfolio with approximately 90%. And that's with accepting almost 100 students of those who apply. Next slide, please. For enrollment, total enrollment for the entire sector has increased steadily over the past 5 years, and it's 6% higher it was in 2018. For the boarding schools, there was a 1.1% increase in total enrollment from the prior year. You can see the boarding component in the light blue for the boarding schools was up 2.5%, while the day student pop component was decreased by 2.5%. And over the past 5 years, the boarding schools had a 1.5% increase in the boarding component and only a 0.7% in the day population. As far as the day schools, there's been a steady increase in each of the past 5 years, 2.8% from the prior year. and 11.2% from 5 years ago. Next slide. Total discount increase for both the boarding and day schools, although it's still moderate. The boarding school median is 24.1% and the day school is 15.5%. Tuition discount range from the boarding schools from 14.2% all the way up to 44.4%. And for the day schools, it ranged from 6.1% to 28%. Only five of the schools you see there in the right-hand column had net tuition growth greater than 5% in fiscal year 21 from 20, compared to 10 institutions from 19 to 20. And you see the five institutions that it's the lowest level in the past 5 years. Nine schools reported a decline in net tuition revenue growth from 20 to 21 compared to 12 for the previous year. And only 32% of the boarding schools net tuition revenue growth was greater than 2% in 21 compared to 80% for the day schools. All right, next slide. Despite the fluctuations in the net tuition and revenue growth, the operating cash flow margin median increased from the prior year, and so that's highest level for the past 5 years, but compares unfavorably to Moody's fiscal year 20 median as for the boarding schools. And like I said before, I think some of the growth is attributed to that PPP loans that were forgiven and that they're able to recognize that revenue in fiscal year 21. For the day schools, it's fluctuated. The median has fluctuated over the past 5 years. There was a slight decrease from the prior year, but it's I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here. And it's at its second level in the past 5 years. Overall, eight boarding and two day schools exceeded Moody's median for fiscal year 21. And all the schools had a positive operating cash flow margin in fiscal year 21, ranging from 3.1% up to a high of 35.6%. All right, thanks, sir. Thank you. As I mentioned before, debt service is manageable for the sector with the annual debt service burden of 4.5% of fiscal year 2021 operations. The strong cash flow margin I just talked about in the previous slide attributed to the favorable debt service cover ratios, but however, they're still below median, Moody's median. For the boarding schools, 4.02 times is the highest level in the past 5 years. This was a 5.4 increase from the prior year and up 35% from 2 years ago. And only five schools ratio declined from over the past 5 years. In fiscal year 2021, we did have one school with a below 1.25 times coverage and over 17 schools with more than 2.0 times coverage. And for the day schools, the median decline in the fiscal year 20, but remained strong over the past 5 years, averaging about 4.1 times. And the day schools had one school less than 1.25 coverage and nine schools with more than 2.0 times coverage. On the next slide. Looking at the spendable cash and investments, as I mentioned before, it's up 44.6% from the prior year, resulting in a favorable cash investments to debt median of 3.3 times, although it's slightly below Moody's last year's median, but it's at its highest level in the past 5 years. We had 13 schools above the 2.0 times coverage and seven schools above Moody's median, although we had two schools that were below one times coverage. For today's schools, there's a only a 25% increase in total spendable cash and investments from the prior year, resulting in over a 33% gain in the investment to debt ratio median. We had three schools above 2x coverage and only one exceeding Moody's median of 3.6x. And we had two schools below 1x coverage for the day schools. All right, next slide for spendable cash and investments to operations. The increase in the cash investments also contributed to favorable results for Christian for operations. For the boarding school, the median was up 47% from the prior year. That's about 2/3 greater than it was in fiscal year 27. We had 10 schools that were above Moody's median and two schools that were below 1x coverage. And for the day schools, there was a 17.4 increase in median from the prior year, but it remains about 10% higher than the 4-year prior average. We had three schools that were more favorable than Moody's median. However, there were two schools that had spendable cash and investments that were less than 1 year's coverage for operation. And the final slide here, capital spending ratio. Only 31% of the institutions invested more in depreciation expense than invested more in their property than depreciation expense in fiscal year 21. You can see it's at the lowest level in the past 5 years. You look at the median capital spending ratio, that's the investment in property plant over depreciation expense, is at 0.65x. It's a little stronger for the day school, for the boarding schools, but here again, it's lowest level in the past 5 years. There's more, the median capital spending ratio declined more for the boarding schools at 36.3%. as opposed to the day schools, were declined 17.4% over the past 5 years. But I think this ratio should improve this year because of the number of issuances in the for the independent schools this year. And I think with more schools investing in their capital. So that's pretty much it. Here again, I always love to thank Krista Johnson for all her help on preparing all this for me. And I'll entertain any questions.
Michael, thanks for the presentation. It's Mike Angelini. Just wondered, you know, higher education has been impacted by international students not being able to make it in the country and attend classes. Have the schools, the secondary schools, been impacted by that at all?
Yes, they have. I don't think it's as dramatic.
Okay. That's fair
enough. As but for the higher education.
Okay.
But they certainly have been impacted.
Michael, this is Alan. Just a quick question about fiscal year 2020. Just looking back at the net revenue growth, that seemed to be one of the weakest years.
Correct.
Growth, you had actually, I think, 12 schools decline, and yet operating margins are the highest they've been in 5 years for that year. And usually we don't see those moving in opposite directions. Just curious what you were thinking is on why the data shows that.
Well, in 2021 was the highest for the operating cash flow margin. It was higher than
20% plus in fiscal year 2020. But
for the operating cash flow margin, is that what you're talking about, Alan?
Yes, yeah.
I don't know if you want to go to that slide, Kara. Can you? That's slide 12. Okay.
Maybe it's the Moody's median then.
I think it was the Moody's median.
All right, fair enough.
Well, it was still relatively high. I mean, that's a good point, you know, considering that many schools had a decline in their net tuition revenue growth.
Okay. Any other questions for Michael? Questions? Independent school report? Okay. Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate it. Always look forward to those annual reports. A lot of good information. Thank you. All right, we've got a couple of updates to cover. Jeanette, we'll start with you with authority updates.
Yes. Thanks, Peter. So we are in the early weeks of the legislative session. And before I ask Dan Gingy to comment on where things stand from a process perspective, I do want to propose that we modify our legislative agenda a bit in light of some industry developments. And you may recall that the agenda that the board approved in November included our proposal on extraterritorial legislation, which is, you know, which we've had in various years, giving CHIFA the ability to issue bonds on behalf of healthcare organizations for cross-border projects when there's a Connecticut nexus. And so, as you know, this proposal mainly pertains to the state's hospital systems, and some of these systems are coming under increased scrutiny at this time over recent activities or planned acquisitions. And so with the systems focused on addressing those issues, I think it will be hard for them to focus on supporting our proposal. And given the scrutiny the industry is under right now, I also think inclusion of this proposal might affect, you know, or jeopardize, so to speak, the rest of our agenda. So based on that, we're proposing that we remove the extraterritorial proposal from the agenda for this session. And, you know, we can come back to it in a future session. And so since the legislative agenda was approved by the board last November, I think it would be appropriate, you know, for the board to consider this modification, and I'm also seeking a vote in that regard. But I'm happy to answer any questions at this point.
Just to be clear, that the legislative agenda was approved. It was presented, discussed, and approved by the board in the fall, in November, as Jeanette said. So to make the change that Jeanette just described for the reasons articulated, we do need to amend the agenda, the legislative agenda that was approved by the board. So there may be some questions on the hows and whys of that, but before we get to that, let's get a motion out there. And then we can pose any questions we'd like to Jeanette. So is there a motion, would someone like to make a motion to amend the previously approved board legislative agenda for the upcoming session?
It's Mike Angelini, I'll make that motion, Peter.
Thank you, Mike, is there a second?
It's Steve, I'll second.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, the motion's been made and seconded. Jeanette gave an overview of the hows and whys. Are there some questions for Jeanette as to, you know, looking for further details in terms of why we're making this change to the legislative agenda?
Peter, it's Daryl. Go ahead, Peter, Daryl. From, I don't think it was from November, I think it was from last year's session, I recall conversation about the fact that the board isn't approving the details of any of the agenda item, but just the agenda items, recognizing that, you know, legislative processes, let me look and see who's on here, is messy and evolves as the session goes through. We need to remove an item that we approved on the agenda so that it, for clarity, that it's not being pursued anymore.
I ask it that way because I think that if we approve an agenda with, say, five items on it, and one of those five items isn't even introduced in the General Assembly, we don't have to remove it, right? So I'm really looking for clarity about why we need to remove it from the agenda, given the generality of the board's approval in the first place.
Okay. Well, with regard to the generality, we had presented an agenda which had, categories of items. We did not put forth the exact language of any, proposed bills for the very reasons you stated, Daryl, that we didn't want to have to worry about tweaking language. But we did have these general categories of things that we were going to focus on. And so cross-border proposal was one of those general categories. As far as whether or not it's going to be put forth, technically before the General Assembly, right now, as I understand it, and Dan Gingy can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Legislative Commissioner's Office has prepared a bill that includes it at the moment, and we would need to, put forth a substitute that would take that portion out, that would remove that portion. And so, that may be another reason why it would be helpful just, to have the board's approval in that regard. I suppose you could say it's a gray area, so.
Okay, thanks.
I think it is a bit of a gray area, but I also think it gives the clarity. It makes the issue very clear, and everyone knows the priorities in the legislative agenda that we will be pursuing. So are there any questions for Jeanette? Any comments? Okay, well, there's a motion that's been made and seconded. All those in favor of amending the legislative agenda for the upcoming session as stated, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you. Motion carries unanimously. Okay.
And then I did just want to turn it over to Dan Gingy to give an update on where we are process-wise with the agenda as that remains.
Thank you, Jeanette. I'm going to touch first on the bill that was introduced today in the Higher Education Committee. It was introduced as Senate Bill 103, and this contains a bulk of our legislative agenda, with the exception of our new markets tax credit proposal, which we're working to have introduced in the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. We've met with both co-chairs, as well as the ranking members of the Higher Education Committee, and they've expressed a degree of support for our proposal. We are on track to have a public hearing for that proposal on the 22nd. And then shortly after that, we'll be working to have the bill voted out of committee to the floor of the Senate. With respect to our new markets tax credit proposal, we met with co-chair Scanlon, who is the House co-chair of the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. And he expressed support for our proposal. However, at this point, he can only commit to screening the bill, which means that he will meet with committee leadership to determine whether or not the committee will take action on our proposal. And because of that, we've also reached out and have had discussions with the vice chairs. They've expressed a degree of support for the proposal as well. And as we're working to have the bill introduced as a committee bill in Finance, Revenue, and Bonding, we're in the process of reaching out to rank and file members to also generate additional interest with respect to our proposal. Once we get the bill introduced in Finance, Revenue, and Bonding, the next step will be to have it scheduled for a public hearing. And then similar to the process in higher education, we'll be working to have it voted out of committee, either to the floor of the House or the Senate, depending on which co-chair introduces it. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Any questions? Okay, thank you. All right, Jeanette, back to you.
That's all I have for the authority updates. And so you can move on to, I think it's Michael.
Michael, yeah. Client updates.
Sure, thank you. On the financing forecast, we have three new bond issues. One for Quinnipiac University for $60 million, going to construct a new residence hall. Sacred Heart University will be presented today. And for Cheshire Academy, they have a number of projects they're looking to do, and that will be Cheshire Academy's first deal with us. And we successfully closed Connecticut College this morning for their issue. And we're going to hear a sales report from Gus Jeremy from PFM. We do have another bond issue that's going to be being paid off. This is LiveWell. This is, they were formerly known as Alzheimer's Resource Center of Connecticut. They're paying off our chief loan, and they're going to have some new money projects, and it's going to be going through the National Finance Authority out of New Hampshire, and will be coming to us. And that's about it.
Any questions for Michael? Michael, I've got a quick one. You mentioned Quinnipiac and their dorm. Are they building a new dorm to increase capacity for enrollment, or is it a renovation of existing rooms?
That I do not know yet. I need to talk to their CFO.
Okay. All right, any other questions for Michael? All right. Joanne, financial report.
All right, thank you. For the period, I'm going to be on page 28 of your packet. Sorry about that. So for the period ending December 31st, 2021, the bond issues closed year to date, total $417.3 million. $343 million of those are new money deals year to date, $142 million over budget, which was $275 million. So that's a nice little positive impact on our chief of revenues going forward. In December, Chief of closed one revolving loan totaling $75,000 for a total outstanding now of $442,000. That would be what's outstanding to date. And we closed one easy loan as well in December for about $5 million. The year-to-date change in net position is $898,000 after operating and non-operating expenses. So our year-to-date revenues are $3.8 million, which is $46,000 over budget. And our year-to-date expenses are $1.9 million, which are $57,000 under budget. Any questions?
Any questions for Joanne? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see. Cynthia?
Hi, I hope my sound is now working. I quickly had another article to share with you, which will probably be obsolete in about 15 minutes when the Fed's minutes come from their January meeting. It's a continuation of the conversation last month where we talked about the actions that the Fed was going to take, you know, to address inflation, whether there'd be an interest rate increase as well as them reducing their balance sheet. And in particular, investors are anticipating about a 0.5% increase and the Fed rate, and 2 o'clock is when those minutes were supposed to be released. But I do have this great article to share from Reuters with you in the chat if you want to take a look at that. And like I said, the minutes should be released and we'll know what is actually going to happen probably within the next 15 to 20 minutes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Cynthia. Any questions? Okay. And Bob. Market update.
Good afternoon. Sorry about that. So on the transaction report, we have one chief of transaction that's listed on the second page of the report for Yale University. This was a remarketing of a previously issued transaction given its puttable structure. The total size of the transaction was $400 million, for which there were approximately $1.1 billion of orders, therefore generating an oversubscription rate of 2.65 times. There were four large institutional orders. One was for $250 million. That was followed by three more orders of more than $100 million each. So for those four large institutions, their orders totaled more than $620 million. The average order size of the remaining 18 orders in the book was approximately $24 million. Overall, it was a good result for the university. Also in the transaction report, I would just note that listed about halfway down on the education section is a deal for Carnegie Mellon. It shows a benchmark of 70%, and then it says SOFR plus 29 basis points. This benchmark or lending rate is actually called the Secured Overnight Financing Rate, or SOFR. It's a volume-weighted median that's derived by tri-party repo transactions that are collateralized by Treasury securities. The Federal Reserve is intending to base, as well as the UK regulators, are intending to phase out LIBOR by the end of June 2023. And LIBOR will be replaced by SOFR and starting as of actually December 31st of last year, some of the LIBOR rates in US dollar are no longer published. So just going forward, if we see other transactions that are in the floating rate arena, they'll be using indices that are derived from SOFR as opposed to LIBOR. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. I won't ask you to expound upon tri-party repo agreements, but thank you for the information.
You're very welcome.
Okay, questions for Bob? All right, thank you very much. Back to Jeanette, strategic plan update.
Yes, so included in your packet is an update on the strategic plan, and hopefully you had the chance to take a look at it. And just to refresh on what we did for this plan period, the three-year plan period, we identified six initiatives, all of which are supporting our strategic pillars. And so the strategic pillars are the overarching things that we've actually had in place. This is our second cycle with the strategic pillars of collaboration, economic and workforce development for the public good, technology, innovation, and public engagement and accountability. And so what I did for the update is try to detail some of the activities that we've done in the first 6 months of this three-year planning cycle just illustrate some of the things we've been working on. And I do want to acknowledge the hard work of all the staff in helping to move these efforts forward. We're trying to interact, innovate, and implement, all at the same time, so it can get challenging. But please, I'm just gonna highlight a few things that were included in the book, and please feel free to ask any questions as we go along. So the first initiative, which as you see there, collaborate, it's really a collaboration focus with other agencies and stakeholders. And so up top is one of the activities that we had specified, take a leading role in identifying and offering newer innovative financial tools. And then what we did for each activity, we put indicators of success. And so the indicator of success, which had been previously presented, was that we would have at least one new program implemented and operational by the end of the plan period. So in terms of making progress towards that, you've already heard about our efforts to create a Connecticut New Markets Tax Credit program as part of the legislative agenda. And then we have also been participating in efforts to explore creation of a health equity trust, which would be a trust funded through philanthropy, as well as potentially other financing mechanisms, you know, loans to support initiatives that could address social determinants of health. So that's something that is sort of in the exploration phase. And then we've also been working with the Office of Early Childhood to identify ways to try to leverage federal funding and see if we can revitalize the Guaranteed Loan Fund program, which has been in existence for over 10 years to support facility needs for childcare providers. And we're really trying to actually get some new lenders and originators into the program. If you can go to the next slide, Kara. Again, on the same initiative of collaborating with stakeholders on the CHESLA side, we have done our headline item, as people have heard, is the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program. And we are very much in the midst of trying to implement that with a launch date of March 15th is what's targeted. So there've been a lot of moving parts to that, you know, involving our outside originator, servicer, SDE, and as well as, you know, our council, and, you know, obviously, staff has been working very hard to make sure we're positioned to launch this on March 15th. And then we are also looking at ways to enhance the marketing of an existing program, the Employer Student Loan Repayment Program, which is sort of almost like a joint venture that we're doing with RISLA, which is the Rhode Island counterpart of CHESLA, to offer sort of a back office portal that can process employer payments on student loans made on behalf of their employees. And we're hoping that this this product, this program will get sort of an additional boost from the fact that the governor in his budget proposals is seeking to expand this tax credit at the state level that actually became effective January 1st. It was originally set up to just benefit pay downs of CHESLA refi loans, and it's being modified to apply to pay down of any CHESLA loan. It doesn't have to be a refi loan. And then we are, as part of the legislative agenda as well, seeking to broaden rather than just referencing higher education as the activities, but to also reference post-secondary education as well. And if you want to go to, I think, page 44, Kara. So the second initiative is broaden, assess, and communicate chief of impact on the not-for-profit sector. And so just moving on a couple of pages to page 46 to highlight a couple of things there. The activity that we have focused on a bit in this first 6 months of the plan period has been to continue to offer impactful grant programs consistent with strategic priorities to support nonprofits in the state. So as you're aware, we've done the $1 million of targeted grants with the workforce development focus. And another thing that we've done that doesn't just apply to grants, it actually applies to all of our chief of programs. We have incorporated some additional data requests from our clients to help us better measure the impact. And that's things like number of jobs created or specific populations that are being impacted. So if you can go to the next slide, Kara. And also in terms of, again, broadening and our impact and our communications, We are offering, we have offered some educational programming so far this fiscal year. We did the webinar on environmental, social, and governmental financing. That was in December. We had some excellent panelists, and that was well received. And then, as you know, we have the nonprofit forum on health equity scheduled for the end of June. And then if you want to skip ahead to page 49. And then lastly, wanted to touch on with regard to communication. We did launch the new website in October. We did, we have had some success with getting some press in terms of op-eds published in the Connecticut Mirror, and also an article on CHIFA's 20th anniversary of grant making in the Hartford Current. And we are continuing to grow our LinkedIn and Twitter followers. So we have experienced some growth there. Obviously, there's plenty of room for continued growth, but we do have a weekly calendar of social media posts, and we're trying to make sure that we are consistently posting information and also trying to drive traffic back to the website. The third initiative, which I believe is on page 50, the next page, is the same concept, but specifically pertaining to CHESLA. And it's broadening and assessing and communicating the impact of CHESLA on post-secondary education. And going forward, there should be more to report on. We are in the midst of an RFP process for an impact study to assess CHESLA's impact on Connecticut's workforce. And then if you can go to page 52, Kara. We are communicating, as you know, the Office of Workforce Strategy, the head of that office is now a member of the CHESLA board. So we are in ongoing communication with them to see if we can collaborate on potentially creating other programs that might support certificate program financing, maybe some sort of zero interest loan fund if that's possible. And again, we've done things, we've made the governor's office aware of all of our, the product of the employer student loan pay down. We have a micro site where people can request demos. So we're maintaining that communication as well. And then initiative four, which I think starts on page 54, Kara. This is to broaden the use of technology to streamline operations and create efficiencies. So obviously during the pandemic, we've certainly demonstrated our ability to effectively leverage technology. We are planning to, we had returned to the office in a hybrid schedule, 3 days in the office, 2 days remote. And we are hoping to return to that mode in the coming weeks. We've deployed, all staff now have company laptops to facilitate that model. And then if you could go to the next slide, we have implemented a new phone system. So that engagement was awarded in November after an extensive RFP process with lots of vetting. It was the system went live on February 1st. So it's still, we're still working on some of the kinks and people are getting used to it. But I think it'll be a great resource for all staff, and also will facilitate communication with other parties as well. And then just to, if you can just go to the next page. I think page 55, is that where we're on? Can you go to 55? Okay, we already covered that. So then going to 59, sorry. Initiative five, just continuing on one of the things with regard to adherence to organizational identity and culture, which was the fifth initiative. One of the activities, providing at least 3 chief of board education sessions and 2 CHESLA ones. So as you know, we've done 2 CHEFA sessions and we have done a CHESLA session. So we will be planning another CHEFA session before the end of the fiscal year, since this was education that would occur annually. And then initiative 6 is on, the final one is on the next page, maintaining the sustainable organization. And so we are, you know, some of this is underway, but we have, we did an annual business continuity test in June of last year. We'll be doing another one this year. And we have some initial procedures developed to address a failover to the co-location site, right, from a testing perspective. So those are, that's sort of, those are the highlights of what we've done in the first 6 months of this plan period. So as I said, I think, you know, through everyone's hard work, we have achieved quite a bit. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Questions for Jeanette? It's a very thorough review, thank you. Questions? Jeanette, I just have one. It has to do with, you mentioned the economic impact study. I know that we've done them in the past. Do we do these on a regular cycle, like every 3 years or every 5th year? When was the last time we did it? I remember doing it. So, I'm just curious what schedule is.
Right. We did one. We've done a couple of them on the CHEFA side. We've not done them on the CHESLA side. So the CHEFA one, I think the last one we did was in the, I would say the last couple of years. And I think our goal was to do them certainly at least every 5 years, but we're also hoping that we can use, as we develop an enhanced data collection of our own, we're hoping that we can do some sort of assessment more real time ongoing in terms of what some of the impact has been. On the CHESLA side, this will be the first impact study where we'll be trying to assess, well, CHESLA's education financing products help support, you know, X number of students, which then took, you know, X number of jobs in the state. Right. So this will be the first time we're doing that one.
Do you recall what firm we used, 4 or 5 years ago when we last did this?
So for that, we had a major firm, IHS Market, which is a major sort of econometrics, you know, data analysis company.
Okay.
So I'm not anticipating a firm at that level for the CHESLA study. That we were able to use them through a volume discount of the CHEFA's Trade Association that would not be available for CHESLA.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Jeanette on our strategic plan update? Questions?
No questions here, Peter. Just. Appreciate the update from Jeanette, and the progress has been great. So thank you.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it. I agree. Very good progress. All right. Thank you all. PFM, we're going to do a sales report on Khan College. Jeremy, I believe you're on.
Great. First sound check. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Michael mentioned earlier that Khan College closed today, so timely here. As we all know, that it's been a rockier start in the markets, you know, to the start of this year than historically it's been. Normally we talk about January effect in a good way, and this year it's been, you know, quite the contrary. And in spite of that, Khan College got in at a good point and got good execution. So if you could go to the next page, Michael. You know, just so to, or whoever's driving here, Kara, sorry. The bullet points here, $60+ million transaction based off of the college's A2 rating with a negative outlook, a general obligation and a structure that went out 30 years with a combination of serial bonds and term bonds, fully tax exempt, primarily to fund new capital plus refinancing existing private placement debt with Citizens Bank. And then if you go to the next page, you know, just has a kind of a few, bullet points here. But really, you know, we went out to the market on February 1st. We had a, pricing call. The tone at the market was really tenuous. The week prior to that saw a massive sell-off in rates. You know, transactions were getting done at wider spreads. You know, one of them that really put the market off was Thomas Jefferson University in Pennsylvania. At a comparable rating, priced pretty cheaply, pricing on the day that the Fed meeting. So we were a little bit concerned about it, but there was a bit more stability in the market when we came in. We had a combination of structures here, you know, with 3%, 4%, and 5% coupons, a wide range of, for an investor base. And what we were pleased to see was that there was healthy subscription level, 3 to 5 times oversubscribed, over in excess of $400 million in orders, over 30 different accounts participating, which provided the ability to tighten spreads by 3 to 5 basis points. And at the end of the day, what we're really striving for is just getting, good fixed rate cost of capital. And ultimately the college was able to get a TIC of approximately 3.2% and change. And what we've got down there is just the, by maturity, what the subscription level is. So you can kind of see where it is. And it was healthiest at the long end of the yield curve. So a good result for one that the college was, very pleased with. Transaction successfully closed this morning. And happy to answer any questions anybody's got.
Any questions for Jeremy? Questions? All right.
Thank you.
Snap. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Jeremy.
Peter, just a reminder that this is Steve speaking, that for the Sacred Heart and Fairfield matters, I'm going to have to recuse myself.
Understood. Thank you, Steve. All right, speaking of which, Sacred Heart, Bob, you're gonna walk us through that preliminary memo?
Yep. Okay, so Sacred Heart intends to seek approval at our March board meeting for approximately 100 million par of unenhanced 30-year fixed rate debt to finance the construction of 2 new residence halls, an expansion at their health and science center, and the renovation of 3 additional residence halls. They also have some other miscellaneous capital projects that will be included in the financing. The university has 5 CHIFA issued bonds outstanding, totaling $307 million. They're rated A3A by Moody's and Standard and Poor's respectively, and has meetings scheduled with the agencies at the end of the month to receive their updated ratings. The university has experienced strong growth in applications over the past 5 years. And this is like translated very well, whether it's, the applications leading to undergraduate and graduate full-time enrollment. It's really been just a positive aspect for the university. The university has attributed its growth to new programs that they've instituted, as well as the investments that they've made on their campus. From an operations standpoint, the university operates at a high level with a robust operating cash flow margin of 31.7%. For the past 5 years, revenues have outpaced expenses, and the return on assets have grown meaningfully. Liquidity has also improved for the university over the past 5 years. For instance, days cash on hand of 527 days is more reflective of a university at the AA rated level. As we mentioned earlier, growth at the university has been very strong. However, that growth does come at a cost. The institution has increased its leverage by financing the investments that they've made on the campus. And that, again, has increased its leverage. And it's increased it to a point where it's higher than the rating agencies would target for their ratings category, and more in line with a university of a lower level. that being said, the university does have a healthy pro forma debt service coverage of more than 3 times. The university has budgeted $3 million in provisions for any COVID-19 related expenses or potential enrollment shortfalls, which, we don't expect at this point. As of the fall of 2021, the university's full-time undergraduate enrollment is more than 380 students above the budget and the prior year. They also expect to close the fiscal year 2021/2022 with an operating surplus. with regards to their endowment, they have a very high percentage of assets that are without donor restrictions at 83.45%. That's very high in comparison to many other universities, so that gives them plenty of financial flexibility. And lastly, their endowment spending rate is about 4%.
Okay. Any questions for Bob? Questions? I'll just say I had a question for you and you just answered it. And that is, I was very curious. You said that they're going to be applying a significant portion of this financing towards new residence halls. And I was wondering if those were renovations or new spaces, similar to what I asked Michael about Quinnipiac. And then you just said that they exceeded their budget by 380 students. I mean, that's pretty significant.
It is pretty significant, and yeah. Even
I guess that explains the need for new residence halls. I mean, if
absolutely.
They can, yeah.
Is that absolutely. A result of the students not traveling internationally?
That's a good question. That topic has never really come up in terms of students selecting schools domestically versus internationally. I'm not sure if that's what your question was pointing at, but
just thinking during COVID, they can't, right. So they're staying local.
Right. But, again, I think, part of their growth has come with the addition of, new modalities at the school. They've also added online education. So, they're just receiving growth from all avenues, but certainly the investment of the camp on the campus, I think, is just a big draw for students.
Well, they're blowing through their enrollment target, so they're doing something right, I guess.
Right, and same with Fairfield University when we get to that university as well.
All right, any other questions?
Bob, Sacred Heart? Hey, Bob, it's Lawrence. Is there sort of a high or ceiling that they're looking at in terms of enrollment?
I don't have to
be supported by the supported. Let me. I'm sorry. Supported by, their campus?
Currently, they do have some lease properties that they use to, fill in when needed if there's an over-enrollment. But obviously they need more space, which is the reason why they're adding the space that they currently have. But I think that, the overflow space that they do have in place will serve that purpose once the new construction is finished. But in terms of targets, in terms of student targets for enrollment, I don't have that, but we can certainly have that for the final memo.
One last question was, I know that they're going through their rating assessment now. Is there an expectation that the ratings are going to be held where they are? Did you get any kind of flavor on that?
Don't have a full flavor, but do anticipate that the ratings will likely stay the same.
Yeah, thanks.
Anything else for Bob and Sacred Heart?
One other thing that I'll just add too is that they're in the silent phase of a capital campaign. It's been going on for, I think, about 3 years. They have $51 million that has been raised thus far. I don't have information in terms of how big they're targeting, but again, that information will be available on our final memo.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? All right, thank you, Bob. The floor is still yours with regard to Fairfield, final memo.
Yep. So Fairfield University has been executing on its strategic plans to grow the university with such a strong focus that it's produced 12 years of successive record applicant growth, in addition to favorable enrollment trends that have led to increases in both undergraduate and graduate enrollment. Financial performance and liquidity have been benefactors not only due to the enrollment growth, but on management's expertise and plan execution, which has led to strong trends in these two areas. Similar to what we talked about with Sacred Heart, the cost of growth has come at a cost. The university has had to add additional debt or leverage. With the issuance of the $30 million that they're looking to get approval on, the university is going to increase its outstanding debt to $289 million, which staff does see as manageable for the university, but it also maintains its leverage metrics to be more in line with institutions that are lower rated. Staff doesn't see this as an immediate concern, but certainly it's just worth, watching for the future or in the future. Staff's overall assessment of the university is very favorable, as we detail in our memo. The amount of debt the university is seeking to have approved today is very manageable for the university. And the proposed project not only addresses its need for more residence halls, but it also fits well within the university's strategic plan and improves the overall student experience at the university. And if there aren't any questions or afterwards, we'd just like to ask the board today for its approval for up to $35 million for the Fairfield University issue Series U.
Okay, before we get to questions, let's get a motion out on the floor. Would someone like to make a motion to accept staff's recommendation for the $35 million financing for Fairfield University? Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion, Sue Martin.
Thank you, Susan. Is there a second?
It's Mike, I'll second it.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, the motion's been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on Fairfield University. I would open it up to any questions that anyone might have for Bob.
Hey, Bob, it's Lawrence. I you made a very good point about, the increase in debt and impact. And I was just looking at operating margin as well as the margin. And I guess, I would frame my question similar to what I asked before, is that, what is the university thinking of in terms of when they budget? Is there a percentage or number that they are looking to that they don't want to go below?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure what their target levels are, but sure. As we've kind of detailed you know, their enrollment is well above what they've budgeted and projected.
Yeah, I guess my only comment on that, and this is a great university, is that, you know, all growth is good until you grow too big and too fast.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's, you know, the university itself has, you know, I think great management. And I think that they've, you know, they have a plan in place that they're not looking to, you know, sacrifice their position or ratings. I mean, I think that they're, you know, they recently were, you know, wasn't very recent, but, you know, they were recently upgraded based on, you know, their metrics and how well they are performing. So, you know, given the fact that the university is, I think, getting to a point where they're, you know, meeting their strategic plan, I don't, you know, there's only so much more that they, I think that they're going to be able to or want to build or expand on. At the university. So, I mean, they're going to, at some point, I think, you know, buy themselves some time where the amount of investment that's going to be needed is going to sort of lessen over time.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's what the expected answer is what I was looking for. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Question on Fairfield? Comments? Okay, hearing none, there's been a motion and a second to approve staff's recommendation of $35 million financing for Fairfield. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you. Denise, I have a quick question for you. I hope Denise is still on.
Yes.
Do we show Steve as an abstention? You know, he steps out of the room, so to speak. So should the minutes reflect that he abstained from the vote?
It'll be reflected that he recused from the matter.
Recused. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, all right, that's fine. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next item of business, prior to the full board meeting, we had an audit finance committee meeting, and I will turn it over to our acting chair of the committee, Susan Martin, for a report.
Thank you, Peter. So yes, the committee met just prior to this meeting, and the first item of business was electing me as the acting chair in Mark's absence. With that done, the committee did approve the minutes from the last meeting, which was a special audit finance committee meeting that was held on November 15th, and those minutes were approved as written. We then heard from representatives from the firm of Barry Dunn. They were engaged to perform a review of internal controls over the accounting functions. And they did a presentation in their report. They actually noted 5 findings and recommendations. They have a rating system that they rate each of those between high, which means it could pose, the item could pose a significant risk, medium or low. The low obviously are more unlikely to pose any sort of significant risk. The findings for the authority, they had 5 of them. None of them were in the high category. There were 2 in the medium category and 3 in the low risk category. So the committee reviewed each of those in detail. We heard the response from management. And at the conclusion of that, the committee voted to unanimously approve the report, and management's response is as presented. The remainder of the meeting was spent reviewing or meeting with 2 audit firms. That was as a result of an RFP that was issued by the authority a few months back. There were 4 respondents to that RFP. Management did some initial review and brought forth the 2 candidates that we met with today. And those firms were Whittlesey and CLA. So we heard a presentation from each of those. The committee had the opportunity to ask questions. After they left the meeting, there was further discussion with management amongst the committee members. And as a result of that, the committee voted to bring forth to request that, then there was a unanimous vote to request that the full board move to engage Whittlesley for a term of 3 years to perform the annual audit, as well as the preparation of the IRS Form 990. It is a 3-year term. However, each year is independent. So the only commitment or obligation is actually for 1 year. And that brought us basically to the end of our meeting, which was just shortly before this meeting started. So I would ask that the full board vote to approve the engagement of Whittlesley.
I'll make that motion. Is there a second?
I'll second, Mike.
Great. So the motion has been made and seconded to accept the Audit Finance Committee's action of appointing Whittlesley as the independent auditor. Susan gave a great recap of the Audit Finance Committee meeting. Are there any further questions for Susan, or there were several others at the meeting? Are there any questions on either the internal audit report from Barry Dunn or the appointment or the recommendation to appoint Whittlesley as the independent auditor? Any questions from anyone who was not at the meeting? Questions, comments? All right. Well, all those in favor of accepting the Audit Finance Committee's recommendation and approving their action of appointing Whittlesley as the independent auditor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you. Motion carries unanimously. And Susan, thank you very much for stepping in as our acting chair for whatever time period is required. Appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome.
I think that is our last business item on the agenda. Is there any other business anyone would like to bring forward for the good of the order? Anyone? Additional business? Well, hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Anyone?
So move, Peter. Lawrence.
Thank you. We got a motion. We have a second?
Second.
I'll second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you all very, very much. Stay warm. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.